we found the perfect house. But there's been no updating it for many years. Then we heard about the FHA 203K, where we can buy that home and get the money to fix it up, all in one low interest rate loan. What a great idea.
Welcome to Love My Renovation Project with me, your host, Mike Young. Anyway, let's see. Welcome. We're going to discuss all things regarding renovation projects, either the 203K, the Homestyle, or one of seven other ones that are out there, including the VA's new one. There seems to be a great deal of consultants out there that say there's no work for me. There's too many consultants. Well, that's not the truth. Can you imagine how many houses need renovation out there? Some of them need so much renovation that they can't even sell them any other way except with a renovation loan. So if you want to be part of the show today, you got some questions or comments, or you'd like to ask about a particular problem you might have, call us at 888-627-6008. I'd love to hear from you. Shaylin, if you're out there, call in. Let's talk about your little new venture. While most 203Ks and other type renovation loans go off without a hitch from time to time, as the homeowner, you may find yourself with nobody to talk to on your side that understands the program. I think this is done intentionally. You don't know anything about it, so they have you hire a consultant who stops being your consultant the minute the loan closes, and he's back, comes an inspector, so he's kind of out of the loop. Well, you can always call us. Go to 203k911.com. Give us a call. Give us an email. Tell us about your issues so that we can be informed when we do call. And we'll find out what we can do to help you. Most times we can help people without any cost or fee to them. If you've got a topic you'd like us to discuss in more detailed terms or specific terms, and you don't want to be on the radio, go to 203konline.com and scroll down to the message center and send us a message and ask us to call you privately. Give us a couple times and dates that you're going to be available, and we'll be happy to call you. Anyway, see what came in store for us. Can I replace a failed retaining wall with a 203K program? The short answer, yes, you can. Some of the things we get from time to time puzzle me. Yes, you can replace a failed roof wall with this renovation product. HUD and FHA are all about safety, health and safety. A failed retaining wall is clearly a safety hazard, so it can be repaired. Included in the repairs, it can be the main part of the repair. You need $5,000 of necessary work before you can use the full 203K to its fullest extent. But health and safety things is one easy way to get to that $5,000. A room addition qualifies. If you're going to add a room to the house, that qualifies as your first $5,000 and more. So we were installing a retaining wall that was actually holding the street back from falling into this property. The property was sitting about 8 feet below the street level and maybe, I don't know, 5 to 6 feet from the street. And that retaining wall that was there, you would think, belonged to the city. But they said, no, no, no. Now, they might have said yes 30 years ago, but now the cities don't have the money to repair these things. So we ended up having to repair it as part of the 203K. The city made it a piece of the action. You know, you can't get that permit unless you agree to pay for the wall, too. So that was in Marin County, California. We're still over installing another one in Marin County where the pilings had to extend more than 12 feet underground. So there's walls for every situation. Safety is always a concern. A few years ago, when I was appraising real estate, I was driving slow. Oh, yes, and I turned the corner looking for an address, and I came head-to-head with a young man and his child on a two-wheel bicycle with training wheels. I just stopped in time. He was shaking. He was nearly killed, as was his child, and it didn't do me any good either. I pulled over and we talked for a while, and I asked him this simple question. You're teaching her to ride that little bitty bicycle, which you can't see through the window with her sitting straight up. You can't see her through a window, and you're going to think she's, where do you think she's going to ride that bicycle when she's by herself and she can ride it? And he thought for a second, and he turned bright red and said, oh my God, what am I doing? I should be teaching you to ride this little bitty bicycle on the sidewalk, shouldn't I? Well, Sunday it happened again. 10 years later, in this time, right on the corner of where I live, it was my next door neighbor. His wife was driving us. And as we came out of the driveway and around the corner, came face to face with his kid. And he shrugged his shoulders and thought, no big deal. It's okay. I'm always with her. Well, a lot of good that does, because you're not always with them. You got to think about what you're doing. You know, if you're living in a little community in Mexico that has no traffic on it, be one thing. But if you're driving in town, you know, if nothing else, you're going to have appraisers driving around during the day, and they're looking for house numbers. They're not expecting to see a small child in the street riding a tiny bicycle, you know, these 10-inch wheels with training wheels. Teach young babies to 2 years and under to ride their bicycles on the sidewalk. It's okay. Nobody's going to chastise them for riding little bicycles on the sidewalk. FHA 203K job site safety. Items to consider on every renovation project that concerns safety of the workers as well as the owner. I was reminded a while back when I saw a pile of concrete with nails sticking out all over it that we can't get lax in our quest for a safe job site. We just can't. And as the consultant, as we go out and do draw inspections, we are looking for health and safety issues, because the rules are, according to the homeowner contractor agreement, and I hope you guys are using that if consultants are listening, use the HUD recommended homeowner contractor agreement, because if it ever has to go to court, and HUD is going to represent you, he's got 17 lawyers that know that agreement inside out. Okay. I can remember when I was a kid, my dad was a contractor and I worked cleaning up, and the grass was high and it was wet because it was morning. So I, like most people, saw some boards there and I stepped on the boards so I wouldn't get all wet, until I stepped on a nail and it came right up through my shoe and through my foot, right through the middle of my foot, all the way out the top of the shoe. That's when I realized, hey, you don't walk on wood on a construction site. It's better to get a little wet than it is to get a little nail coming up through your feet. I hadn't seen anything like that in quite a while. Contractor agreement indicates that the contractor will leave the job each day by securing the home and making it safe for the owners. If you're a contractor listening to this right now, your men leave that job and you've got nails sticking up in boards all over the place, the homeowner is going to be there when you're not there. They're trying to stay out of your way. They're trying to do you a favor. So what are you going to do? You're going to put booby traps out there for them? I don't think so. I think you shouldn't anyway. So think about what you're doing. Make sure your job site is clean and safe when you leave it. On another project last week, we saw forms that had been ripped out and left with nails sticking out. I turned them over, but notified the shop superintendent when he arrived of what I saw and when I got there. He was all over his crew for leaving it that way and assured me it's not going to happen again. It's not normal to have it happen at all. I've been on jobs with them for many years, and I found that if I see a nail sticking up out of a board, turn it over. Don't assume the next guy is going to turn it over. The next guy is going to step on it, and you could have saved him that pain. The time that I did step on one, in fact, I stepped on two or three over the years, but it wasn't pleasant. And I think the shot hurt more than the nail. Yeah, give you that tetanus shot. Oh. Let's see where we are here. You learn real fast. You don't step on boards at a job site. You step on the green. If you ever had a board with a nail sticking out, turn it over right then. Don't wait. Don't think somebody else is going to do it. Anyway, the next question we had this week was, hey, I got a brand new roof, so all must be okay. Years ago, I was doing a home inspection, and the lady and I knew each other for years. She was buying a brand spanking new home, and she asked for a home inspection. When I got out there, it was one of my contractors that I had done lots of 203Ks with, and he thought, this is absolutely ridiculous to have a home inspection on a brand new house. I mean, that is just a waste of time and money. I found several safety issues. He put, like, it was a large kitchen, and he put GFIs about every 2 feet around the kitchen. There was, I think there was 15 of them. And he didn't tie any of them together. They all had power direct to them. The funny thing is, none of them worked. When I tried to trip them, they didn't trip. When I put my tester in there and shorted it out, they didn't trip. The light came on. They were being shorted, but they were not working. The contractor, when I got finished, the contractor and I went over and looked over the things. He had a step in the front of the house, the entry, and the handrail was loose. If somebody grabbed it, was actually going to fall, they would probably fall and take the handrail with them. It wasn't secure. I don't remember what all was wrong with that, but the big thing was the roof. They had gutters on the roof, and the gutters weren't, I don't know how they could have even done this. I used to manufacture gutters and downspouts years ago, and the gutter has a wing on it, or a lip on it, that usually is nailed to the house before the shingles go on. It looked like they put this on after the fact, and they allowed the roofing, the gutter, was fine in the front of the house, but as I went toward the back, the gutter was actually 2 full inches higher than the house. So the water coming down the roof on the back of the house would actually run into the about 2 inches down on the gutter on the side and just fall to the ground. The contractor was totally beside himself. He did not know what to say. He was embarrassed. And the lady just looked at him and says, well, it looks like it was a good idea I had a home inspection. So when somebody calls for a home inspection and you're a builder, hey, just live with it. And I wouldn't make too much to do about it ahead of time until you find out that it's vacant and there's nothing there. And then you can make all the to-do about it you want. But when you make to-do about it before the inspection, and then a lot of these kind of things popped up, the home inspector was vindicated. Anyway, if you want to be part of our show today, call us at 888-627-6008. I got to tell you, they're much more interesting when you guys have some questions. Keeps me interested, too. We'll be right back after this short break, so stay tuned.
We've been looking for a home in a great neighborhood, but they're all too small. Then we heard about the FHA 203K loan program, where we can add a room or two when we purchase. and get a single loan to cover both the purchase and the room addition. What a great idea!
Hey, you know, we're back with you. Thanks for joining us today. We appreciate it. Now, I'm going to be on vacation. You're going to hear reruns for the next couple weeks. That's okay. You probably haven't heard all the shows yet, and I'm sure the engineer will pick out a couple of good ones. Somebody has to help the rest of the world survive, and we're going to be going down the Panama Canal, shoot over to Jamaica. I've never been to Jamaica. I can't believe it, but I haven't. So, sounds like fun to me, and we're going to go to, where are we going? We're going to go to Costa Rica, Jamaica, Panama, Limon. Anyway, we'll be back with you on the 17th of March. March. Anyway, next question. I got a new roof, so it must be okay. Well, that leads into the last, kind of like the last thing we were talking about, a brand new house. Roof was an issue, but so just having a brand new roof doesn't make things all right. You know, sometimes it's confusing to me how a contractor calls him a contractor and then installs a roofing material so water goes up under the roof edging. In other words, he puts the roof edge on top of the shingles. Well, the idea of roof edging, and I used to manufacture it, is it's supposed to be on the roof, so any water that gets on there goes off. And it usually has a drip edge, an edge that kicks out. Some of them have an edge that kicks in and it hugs the wall, but that'll allow water to go right down the fascia. So if it kicks out and water hits it, it drips away from the house instead of running down that fascia. Anyway, what we need to do when you're putting a roof on is you need to make sure that it's done properly. And if your specification of repairs specifies a new roof, tear off all the existing roof. You know, I know some people, there's only two layers of roofing allowed now. So, and it used to be more. You used to have to be able to do three. But sometimes you have three up there when you get there. And in order to save some money, some people are just taking two off, leaving one there and covering it up. And if you're going to do it, let's do it right. Take it off. Take it down to the sheathing. Make sure there's no rot on the sheathing. And then put a new tar paper and roofing up there and make sure you've done a great job. You know, we don't want this thing to leak in a couple of years because you took a shortcut. You know, you're bidding the job, so bid it accordingly. Okay, let's see, be back. Yeah, sometimes you can add another layer, a second layer. Years ago, I was doing a real estate appraisal, and they had a brand new roof on this house, and it was scalloped between the ceiling joists. They looked like they were about 48 inch on center. This thing dipped, and I wasn't sure if it was built that way or what. And they had the flashing, the edging, on the top, on the outside. So what they were doing was covering up the number of layers so you couldn't see how many layers of roofing were on that house. But as an appraiser, I wanted a roof inspection because we're not supposed to do that as appraisers. So they had the roof inspection. That realtor went ballistic on me. So he was upset. He said, you can see it's brand new shingles. Why in the world would you demand a roof inspection? And I said, well, because I can. You know, I don't really have to explain myself to you. But anyway, so time went by. About 3 months go by. I thought that deal was already closed because I just conditioned it to get a clear roof inspection. But about 3 months later, the lender calls me and says, we need you to go out and look at that roof and see that it's been repaired. Because the roof inspection called out that scalloping as too much weight. He had 5 layers or 7 layers of roofing up there, including his newest one. But I think it was 5 layers. It was just too much weight for that house. And I thought, oh my God, that same realtor is going to be meeting me again. Wow. You know, I got to stay away from this person. Back as far as I can. I don't know. I hope he's got his stuff together this time. So I pulled up, and sure enough, that realtor's running up the street towards me. And I'm thinking, oh, geez, oh, is this all over again? And as he got close enough for me to hear him, he said, thank you so much. And I thought, what? Is this the same guy that was going ballistic on me 3 months earlier? And that's what he told me. He says the inspection proved that it had 5 layers of roofing. And that's what was causing that sagging. He says, look, there's no sagging anymore. It goes straight across the top. That ridge line is just perfectly straight. He was a different person. He confessed to me that he was told that if in the smallest of earthquakes, that roof could have come down and killed his clients. And that was not going to be a good situation. So he did appreciate having that caught. And even though it delayed his commission 3 months, he still got a commission, and he's probably going to have another sale from that buyer in a few years when they go to upgrade. But I particularly, when they got a new roof on a house, I particularly look to see that the roof edging is new, the roof jacks and caps are new. We used to manufacture them, so I know what new looks like. I had somebody recently tell me that when I called him, I said, that one roof jack is the original roof jack that was up here. Why didn't you replace it? And he said, well, they don't carry that anymore. I said, they do carry it anymore. You just have to know where to go buy it. Buy it from any sheet metal shop. They'll build you one from scratch. How do I know that? My dad was a sheet metal contractor before he became a general contractor, and I grew up in the business. Now, replace that roof jack too. So some people think they can get away with things by lying to you. I had a job out in the boonies. It was way out in the middle of nowhere. And the contractor did his own work write-up, and they asked me to come out and do a plan review and become the draw inspector. So I went out there to do it. I said, well, you missed this. These fuses on the electric panel are not allowed. You have to upgrade this. And the contractor sat there and tried to convince me that, well, look, we're way out here in the boondocks, and there's not enough power out here to provide power to a 125-amp panel. And I said, is that a fact? Well, that's the first time I've ever heard that. I wonder why they didn't teach me that when I went through electrician school. I was the number 2 electrician at Stauffer Chemical. We worked on anything from millivolts to 4,160 volts. And then I looked next door, and I could see the house next door had a panel that must have been 4 feet high and 2 feet wide. And the lady saw us looking at her house and came out of the house. Can I help you? I said, you're looking at my house. And I said, well, ma'am, that's a mighty fine electrical box you have there. What's that all about? It's kind of big for a house. And she said, oh, well, I got a bigger one out there at the barn. But this is 600 amps. And I said, really? So I looked at the contractor and I said, look at that. They won't give you 100 amps or 125 amps, but they're going to give her 600 amps. On the same pole. Isn't that shameful? He got a little red-faced, and we added that to the scope of work. But I've seen some interesting things coming off of the pole. We had one house in Oakland, actually in the hills in Oakland, that had a 30-amp fuse, and that was the entire house. All the outlets in the house were powered off that one 30-amp fuse. And when I went in the kitchen and I was looking at the cupboards, I opened a drawer, and this one drawer, large drawer, was full of what they call penny fuses, because some people would just take the fuse out, put a penny in there, and put the fuse back in. Not a smart idea, by the way. You can cause a fire big time. So, anyway, I asked the people that were living there, I said, do you have the fuses go out a lot? She said, oh, yeah, I have to change fuses every morning when I use my hair dryer. 1,500-watt hair dryer. So, anyway, these things must be done. And you have to have people making the scope of work that know what they're doing. I was an electrical instrument specialist at Stauffer Chemical in Martinez, California for, I guess, almost 5 years. So these roofs, all these things are important to be done properly. But I pay particular attention to stuff that I used to manufacture. You're not going to get anything over on me with a roof or an electrical issue. See, the next question we had, FHA 203K in mixed-use buildings. Oh, my God, I love that question. We had a guy call me, and he says, I've got a mixed-use building, and we're having trouble with the consultant that we have. He doesn't seem to understand that we can do mixed-use with 203K. So, absolutely, what we were doing is, the problem wasn't that he didn't understand. The problem was that he had a single-family house detached or attached with a fence over to a commercial building. And the commercial building was just too many square feet for this to fit or comply with the 203K program for mixed-use buildings. It was one story. And at that time, you could only have 25% of the structure could be allowed to be used for commercial use, 25%. Today, it's 49%. Today, that would have flown easily without any problem. But what we ended up doing was we made the front building, which was commercial, we turned it into a mixed-use building or a live-work situation so that we picked up some more square footage. I think the front house was something like the back house rather was about 1,400 or 1,500 square feet. And the front store was large enough that they couldn't get, as is, they couldn't reach that 25%. They were over 25% commercial. So we had to get that back down to 25%. Today it would have flown as long as you had 49%. And it was easily that. 49% commercial, 51% residential, and it flies on a one- or two-story building today in the current guideline. But where else can you buy a mixed-use building or a commercial building for 3.5% down? I mean, this is pretty cool. And these buildings exist everywhere. I can't tell you. When I talk about these buildings at a real estate board or association, you get some people always yell out their opinion while you're talking about these things. Yeah, there's not that many of them here. And I said, interesting, because I always look when I come in and I counted about 30 of them on the street next door to us, the next block or the next couple of blocks. They're all over the place. You just haven't noticed them because you don't sell a lot of them. But, gee, anybody here that sells commercial real estate? And several hands went up. I said, you sell commercial? What's the down payment typically? And they said, well, you've got to have about 35% down. And I said, how would you like to sell them for 3.5% down? Do you think you could sell more if you only had 3.5% down? Yeah. The problem is they have to be owner-occupied in the residential part. The commercial can be rented to anybody, or you can use it for your office. So, you know, one of my favorite was one we did in Oakland, California. The contractor now had a showroom. He lived over above, and he could look out on his trucks, which were locked in his backyard. The gate was closed. They're locked at night. He could take a peek out there and look at his cars or trucks at any time. His wife liked it because he was working more out of the office downstairs, when he was doing plans and takeoffs, he had an office to do that. And he had a showroom where he could put up some carpet and some tile choices. Whenever he did a 203K or any other kind of loan, he would bring the people to his showroom and say, look, here's three tiles you can choose from. Here's three carpet types you can choose from. And he had this thing laid out to plan, because by having these colors and using these colors only, if he ran out of something, he could always have a place to get it. He always kept some in stock. So it was a good thing. Anyway, please call in at 888-627-6008 if you want to be part of the show. You have a question, a comment, you want to talk about a project that you've done recently that might be interesting to our listeners, please feel free to call us. We'll be right back after this short break, so stay tuned.
We found the perfect house, but there's been no updating it for many years. Then we heard about the FHA 203K, where we can buy that home and get the money to fix it up, all in one low interest rate loan. What a great idea.
Yahoo! Welcome back. Hey, call us at 888-627-6008 to be part of the show. We'd love to hear from you. Getting back to these mixed-use buildings, some of the rules include no renovation to the tenant of the tenant improvements can be done, or the interior of the commercial portion of the building. That's okay, because normally they let the tenant pay for those improvements or finance them into the term of the lease. We used to have a lot of rental property, and we had a lot of commercial property, too, industrial property, and the tenants would come in, and they would have specific needs, and depending on their lease, the basic lease was X number of dollars, and for people that are non-real group here, if they wanted to add a bunch of work, a bunch of walls, put in an office or something like that into the industrial space, we would let them do that, get a bid on that work, and then we would spread it out over the term. So the longer the lease gave us, the smaller that payment was going to be. And we had banks that would finance that for us and give our money now so we could get done and then back over time. So it was a good deal. But you can't fix anything on the tenant improvement side, the inside of the building. The outside of the building, if you've got a town, you know, you're downtown and you've got a residential over commercial, you can fix the outside of the building, even though it's commercial. You can fix the outside because that has an effect, a direct effect on the value of the residential above it. The income from the commercial use, though, is not counted for qualification purposes. Okay, but a good portion of the rent from all the residential units helped the borrower qualify for the loan. So I found over the years that if you qualify for a single-family house, you will probably qualify for a duplex, triplex, or a fourplex. Single-story properties used to have only 25% commercial use. Now, under the current 4000.1 guideline, they have 49%. If you have a two-story building, the commercial is restricted to the first level. And again, 49% of the total building or less can be commercial. So if you had a three-story building, you're only looking at 33% as commercial, so that easily qualifies. There's no better loan program, in my opinion, available for this type of property. And particularly new investors, because you can live in that place, have your offices downstairs. You can imagine having your office downstairs and running your business right out of that. your marriage will last longer too if you're that close to home, if you're married. We had one in Oakland years ago that had 5 commercial offices on the first level and residential above. Use your imagination. Why fight with short sales? This doesn't make any sense. So, anyway, I want to talk a little bit about Officer Next Door and Teacher Next Door programs. Officer Next Door will find a knowledgeable realtor, someone who's bid on properties on the HUD website many times. I can't stress that enough. It's very important to find somebody, not a novice, because they can put a lot of work into this. And with the Officer Next Door and a Teacher Next Door program, you're going to get a 50% discount up to the amount of the listing. So if you've got a house listed for $500,000, you're going to be able to get $250,000 discount. Did you hear that? If you're an officer, I'm talking about a fireman, EMT, a police officer, because we want your cars coming in and out of the neighborhood on a regular basis. We want people seeing the badge as it comes and goes. So, FHA has come up with this Officer Next Door program, but it was designed to help police officers, firemen, EMT in targeted neighborhoods who purchase HUD foreclosed homes at a discount. So what you do, and you got to be careful. That's why you want to find somebody that's knowledgeable. So you find an officer next door, and he's okay. You live in this neighborhood where they found a home that's eligible for the Officer Next Door program. And it's listed at $300,000. So you're going to bid something for that house. Now, other bidders are going to be on that house too, and they're bidding, $295,000, $295,000, $285,000, $250,000. You know, the house may need some work, so some may bid $200,000. You're going to bid $300,000 because that's the listing. And $10. $300,010. And once your bid is accepted, then you're going to explain that you're an officer next door. And here's your paperwork to qualify you. And they're going to take $300,000 and take 50% off of it. So you're going to pay $150,010. Now, here's the danger, and it's a big danger. Your officer next door says, look, I'm going to get a 50% discount, so why don't I offer $350,000 or $310,000? Well, that's fine, and you can do that. But anything you bid over the list price, you have to come up with in cash or check, but you have to come up with that extra. That's why I said make it $10 and not $50,000. And they take that $300,000 and you bid $350,000. Anything over the $300,000, you have to come up with in cash. You can't finance it. It has to be in cash. That's your new down payment. So you just shot yourself in the foot. And it's no fun when a policeman shoots himself in the foot, for sure. So, what can we do? You're only going to offer more than the list price up to what you have in your pocket or up to what you have available to pay, and realize you're still going to have to pay your 3.5% down. So don't spend it all by overbidding. Caution to realtors. If you haven't got the experience, don't do one of these, or team up with somebody and do it so that you get that experience. But when Officer Next Door program or Teacher Next Door programs go into effect, there's no commission. HUD does not pay a commission to the realtor when they're given 50% discount to the Officer Next Door or the Teacher Next Door. They don't pay a commission, so you have to build your commission into the offer. You have to make sure that the buyer is willing to pay you. He can get it financed, but he's got to be able to pay you your commission. So it's important. But the reason we want that is because we want these automobiles and uniforms coming in and out of the neighborhood. That's why it's particular neighborhoods. Many officers live outside the community where they serve, and that's okay too. But the badge and the car still pop in now and then. But don't bid too high on these things. Any more than what you have in your pocket is what I recommend. I lost a deal once because of an offer. They were asking $210,000. Actually, $209,950. And a very well-known realtor in Richmond, California, he just rounded it up because it was easier to write $210,000 than it was $209,500. And I lost it for $50 because I bid full price and he was $50 higher. So if you're an investor, you've got to learn these little tricks. I knew another investor out of Berkeley, very, very sharp Persian fellow, Ali. And Ali, he had it down. He'd pay full price for any large house, and he would buy some huge houses. He did that because he knew that he was going to take those things and turn them into SRO, single room occupancy. And he specializes in renting to teachers who are visiting the University of California at Berkeley and are going to be teaching for a year or two or 5 years as a guest instructor. So he would rent them a single room in that big house for $1,000. Now, this is some time ago. They may be $2,000 now. I have no idea. But at that time, it was $1,000, and they would have a sink in each room. They would share bathrooms, typically. Some of them had bathrooms, a master bedroom. He would get more for those. And they would share the kitchen with everybody else. So there's all kinds of ways to do this. I know I had to appraise one of these for him years ago. We were doing some as 203Ks, and he was the investor, and then we were doing some as appraiser. And appraised one of these things, and if he had taken one and picked it up and moved it way back on the lot, and then he dug a big hole and put it in underground parking and a new foundation, picked another one that he paid full price for. He did not quibble about the price. And he picked that one up and drove it around the block and planted it on his new foundation. So he had two large houses on a lot. And then he had a lot free and clear around the corner where he would build a brand new structure for the way he did it. Those would all have bathrooms. They were all mini suites, effectively. But if you're appraising according to the income, these things were worth $24 billion after he paid top dollar for them and bought them for $500,000 and bought the other one for $500,000. So he's into it for $1 million, plus he had to put the underground parking, which is premium in that area. This was right on Cedar in the gourmet ghetto. For those of you who are, or that's where Chez Panisse is located, and several other nice restaurants. Anyway, this is all fun, and the Teacher Next Door program works exactly the same. So if you're a teacher looking for a house from grades, 1 through 12, you might look at something for the Teacher Next Door program. Get a hold of a realtor that knows their stuff in buying FHA foreclosures. Anyway, if you got any comments or want to talk about something, please call us at 888-627-6008. Toll free. We'll be right back after this last break for today.
We've been looking for a home in a great neighborhood, but they're all too small. Then we heard about the FHA 203K loan program, where we can add a room or two when we purchase and get a single loan to cover both the purchase and the room addition. What a great idea!
Hey, welcome back. If you want to call and be part of the show, call us at 888-627-6008. We'd love to hear from you. Excuse me. That was our last break. No more breaks now until the end of the show. And then I'll be back with you on the 17th of March, Sunday. Question that came in. Can nonprofit organizations have access to the 203K loan guarantee program? Yes, nonprofits can. Nonprofits get actual special treatment. All foreclosures that HUD does get looked at by the nonprofits first. Why? Why is that possible? Why is that happening that way? The idea is that we are going to create some low-cost housing, because nonprofits are governed by a 10% maximum profit. So if they're buying these things at 50% off, just like Teacher Next Door and Officer Next Door, they can only put 10% on it. So if they're paying $300,000 or bidding $300,000, getting it for $150,000, and then they're going to put 10% on that, they can only put $15,000 of profit on there. They do get to use the 203K program if they want. The problem is, and if any lenders are out there, this is a big market, a huge market. And we've got people standing in line to get on this, but so far we haven't been able to find a lender that's ready to lend to a nonprofit. Dusty, if you're out there listening to me, I've got probably a dozen potential clients for you. If you'll just say, hey, we'll loan to a nonprofit organization. These nonprofits have already gone through and jumped through the hoops and approved at HUD. They're ready to buy. Why doesn't the lender want a loan to them is beyond me. What I've heard in the past is that we had nonprofits, they have to qualify for the house individually too. So you've got the president of that nonprofit or the managing partner that is personally guaranteeing the loan. You got HUD guaranteeing 96% of the loan. They're putting 3.5% down. Now, are some special down payments. I mean, they might get in for $100 or $500 special down payment as an incentive to buy some of these homes that need a lot of work. But in any case, they're going to be put back on the market as low-income housing or as a low rental, okay, which helps the neighborhood. We used to have a lot of customers. In fact, something like 85% of my business at one time was nonprofits back in the mid-90s up through about 1998. What happened? Well, we would go into churches in the neighborhood. Many of them were dilapidated. They were falling down. And I'd make an appointment, and we'd go back, and we'd speak, usually in the evening, in front of the pastor and some other elders, and explain how this program works. But as you're a nonprofit, and you're in a targeted neighborhood, particularly, where these foreclosures exist, you can do a tremendous good. The nonprofit has to have a higher calling. So a church is that higher calling. We had some nonprofits that were all about renovating people, rehabbing people back into the workforce. People on drugs, they would get them off the drugs, and then they'd give them a job, and they'd use these people as workers on the houses. But I've seen some churches that have a lot of people that out of work, and they can put those people to work. Because they own the house, they can put those people to work. They might have a contractor that's just on hard times. So there's lots of pluses for this. They can clean up their neighborhood. They're going to be turning these houses over 50% discount and then add 10% profit and overhead. And then they're going to dump that house back on the market. But they could sell it to somebody in their church at a reduced price. There's really a lot of good that can be done here. And these houses now are going to sell for $175,000 when they're worth $300,000. Now, those people need to live in that house for 3 years, whoever buys it. If they sell it before the 3 years, then HUD wants that other $150,000 back. And that's what happens when you go to sell it before the three-year mark. They'll pick up on that sale. They'll have a cloud on the title that says, look, if this is sold before this date, then there's a $150,000 lien on the house. But if they live there the full 3 years, it's theirs. So 4 years later, they can sell it. They can put that money in their pocket or use it as a down payment on another house if they're ready to upgrade because their income has changed. But there's a lot of reasons for a nonprofit to want to use the program. Our only problem right now, okay, our only problem right now is finding a lender that's willing to loan a nonprofit. Why would a realtor cater to nonprofits? Because they're going to, you get to write your own commission in there, and you might get the listing. So as a nonprofit fixes this house up, uses people inside the church to as the skills to put the house back together, you are going to get that listing and quite often get that listing. And you might also belong to that church. Okay. Now, if we got your interest, find us a lender. Lenders out there, if you want a loan to a nonprofit, let us know that. Call me and let's talk about it. There's absolutely no reason not to lend to a nonprofit. Why would this be a good move? Every officer or elder in that organization qualifies as a buyer for the nonprofit. Each of them guarantees the loan as well as HUD. What could be better or more secure? I've got a dozen nonprofit organizations right now ready to drop the hammer on this program and get back into it. They used to be into it until lenders stopped loaning to nonprofits. I've got a real hot correspondent lender that would love, she could put a dozen nonprofit organizations back in the business. So keep it in mind, you know, it might be something you want to get into. I know if I was a lender, that would be or a realtor, either way, that would be a great thing to want to do. So let's look at some kitchen range hoods. You probably figured out I used to be a manufacturer. We used to sell sheet metal products. We manufactured aluminum flexible duct. I can't tell you how often I go into a house, particularly one that's recently been fixed up, and you look at the kitchen range hood, and the vent is aluminum flexible duct. Well, aluminum flexible duct cannot be sold without installation instruction. How do I know? Because I used to write the installation instructions. But one of the things at the end of the instructions is we tell people you cannot use this as a dryer vent. Aluminum flexible duct should not be used as a dryer vent because it's got too many places to catch moist lint. And then it becomes a fire trap. Same thing with the kitchen range. Kitchen range hoods are typically 7-inch smooth wall pipe. Look at your code if you forget about it. We don't espouse code, but it's in the code that it should be a smooth wall pipe. Range hoods draw fumes and grease from the range, interesting enough. Then the filter gets dirty. Some people take the filter out and leave it out and blow that grease right up through the flexible duct. It's only there until it catches on fire. And class 1 duct can burn through in relatively short time. And that's what happens. People just don't clean those very often, not like they should. Okay. What should you be using? 26 gauge minimum smooth wall galvanized sheet metal duct. But then you're going to need an elbow or two or some angles. Wouldn't it be easier to run flexible duct? Sure, it's easier, but it's not to be used that way. Now, I just moved into a house recently. It's been a year now. And the range hood, the guy choked it down to 5-inch aluminum flexible duct. You know, I'm just beside myself. Why would he choke it down? All these vents are manufactured to have a 7-inch duct. Now you choke it down, so you're going to be pushing more air through there. Smaller duct, it's going to clog sooner, not later. So we've got to get that changed. I know. We should have done it already. Well, the corrugations tend to hold grease, so we don't want to do that. Then we see this one with an electric range with an aluminum flex duct as the vent. Electric range. What else does this tell you? It tells me that the homeowner installed this product, most likely. A contractor didn't do it on either case because contractors know better than to use flexible duct if they ever read any instructions. I'm sure they do. It's easier to install, but, you know, you're looking for trouble if you do that. There was also a smoke detector in the kitchen. I always found that interesting because if you burn toast, it'll set the alarm off. Enjoy life. Don't use flex duct for venting range hoods, please. I beg of you. So anyway, thank you for being with us today. We appreciate it. I know there's people listening because I get a lot of calls during the week and people say, oh, wow, I recognize your voice from the radio show. We do enjoy you there. We would like it if you'd call in and talk to us. You may have a specific issue that you'd like to talk about it. We appreciate that because it gives our listeners something new to talk about. And somebody call in and offer you some suggestions. And if there's any of my trainees out there listening and you want to be on this show and maybe host one of our shows, let us know. Because I take vacation quite often. But thanks for being with us today. Join us next week on Sunday between 1 and 2 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. This broadcast is coming to you directly from our Las Vegas, Nevada office. We look forward to seeing you next time. Please bring your questions and plan on calling in on the 17th of March when I get back. In the meantime, we will be having shows. We will be having recorded shows. And I'm sure you probably haven't heard them all, so stay in there with us, and you may develop some questions and want to call in on the 17th. But thank you for being with us today. We appreciate it, and hopefully we'll see you next week.
Tune in every Sunday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time to BBS Radio Station 1 and learn more about making home renovations possible, profitable, and hassle-free. Isn't it time you learned how to make money doing something you love? Visit 203konline.com now, and let's get your home makeover projects done right.